Hello there, comic book fans. Welcome to episode 49 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get all the info on the newest books, the classic books, and the trade paperbacks out on the shelves. I'm Andy Slaughter, and I will also be hosting with Brian Shearer, one of the creators of Gravy Boy. Gravy Boy is bringing you this show. It's the comic for folks who like a little hero and they're superheroes. Check it out at www.gravyboy.com. Well, let's see. How are you doing today, Brian?
I am doing pretty darn well.
Good.
I'm tired. I got off work a little later than I anticipated, but other than that, doing well. I don't think I've talked to you, but I actually made it to the comic shop last week and got my books.
I heard about that. Fantastic.
Yeah, and there were only six of them. So I got those and I read them. And
wait, that's the one that had Ultimate Spider-Man 101 in it, right?
Yes, it is the one that had Ultimate Spider-Man 101. And as well as Teen Titans 38 and 39. That totally, completely bored me. So I think I'm going to be dropping Teen Titans. It hasn't done anything for me in the last couple years. And that wonderful four-page ad in Spider-Man 101, of course.
Yes. Yeah, that would annoy me. That annoyed me when I picked up that book, too. So, and Marty, last time you guys were talking about some of the Civil War tie-ins, right?
I think Marty had talked about some of the Civil War, which since then I've read Fantastic Four, and I don't remember which. I think it was the latest one that came out. That was the Civil War tie-in, and as well as I guess it was Amazing Spider-Man. They both kind of are kind of connected, but yeah, was it Fantastic Four? Was it Spider-Man? They kind of actually held my interest. I was kind of interesting to see. It was interesting to see Peter Parker kind of turn on Tony Stark.
So I'm kind of
interested about that. I didn't think I would be because I haven't been keeping up with Civil War, you know, since.
Well, they have totally slung his character in the mud.
Who's
Tony Stark? I mean,
yeah, that's what I hear. But I haven't been keeping up with it, so I really have no idea what's going on. I mean, I know what's going on. I know that they're keeping people in the negative zone if they don't register as superheroes. And then, you know, I know that Reed Richards is helping them, and the Fantastic Four have abandoned Reed Richards.
Right. Well, basically, they've taken Tony Stark to the point where all he needs is a little swastika on his shirt, and it's complete.
To shave that little mustache, a little goatee into a... Shave it up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you want to go ahead and get started with the new books?
Yeah,
this week?
Yeah, have at it.
Let's see. Justice number 8 from DC Comics, written by Alex Ross and Jim Kruger. And I think it's Jim Kruger and Alex Ross writing. Doug Brathwaite and Alex Ross on art. Basically, Doug Brathwaite is doing the pencils and layouts, Alex Ross painting over them, embellishing them.
Mm-hmm.
As you might know, this series is one of my favorites. Basically, every issue, which comes out every 2 months, is consistently wonderful. I mean, it's beautiful to look at, of course, Alex Ross. Even, you know, sometimes people complain about his sequential artwork. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times he uses models and life drawing, and so I've heard some complaints that it's a little bit stiff for sequential art. But that's not really the case here, because he's doing it over the pencils, and it's really incredible. I mean, seeing the Flash, you know, in this issue, it starts out with the Flash chasing Captain Cold. After being basically poisoned by Captain Cold, basically what happened was that the superheroes, some of which Batman, the Flash, Superman, were poisoned by these tiny worms that kind of controlled the brain, or at least put the heroes under the control of the supervillains. And Flash
Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, similar to that. And Flash, in the couple of issues beforehand, was just running himself to death. I mean, he was doing trips around the world, and his metabolism was feeding on itself. So Superman and Captain Marvel saved him in a really, really awesome scene in the previous issue. So he catches up with Captain Cold, and all of the Justice Leaguers have been, in the first part of the series, were attacked by their worst foes, and they've all kind of come out of it. They've survived thanks to, you know, help of additional supervillains outside of superheroes, outside of the core Justice League group. So now they're all together in Superman's Fortress of Solitude, trying to figure out what to do and, you know, how to strike back, because now the supervillains are corralling thousands of people into these mega cities that are floating above the world, and with the stipulation that basically the supervillains are going to rule over these cities, but responsibility for all of your life is going to be taken away from you. And basically, you know, you'll be taken care of, but you'll have to give over all of your responsibilities and free will to these villains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's making the heroes look really bad because the villains are stepping in, acting like they're the saviors of the world.
Right. Yeah.
So they're trying to decide what to do about that, and the villains know all of the heroes' secret identities now, and they've kidnapped everybody the superheroes care about. You know, Lois Lane, all of the Teen Titans like Dick Grayson, Aqualad, Donna Troy. You know, just everybody in the old school Teen Titans are now sort of under the control of the supervillains, while, you know, people like Lois Lane and Jim Gordon, Carol Ferris are kidnapped. So at this point, the heroes are like, man, you know what? We got to do something. We got to get together and take these guys out. So and that's where it leaves off. You see a lot of talking in this issue, but you also get a great deal of action, at least in the opening scenes with the Flash. So it's wonderful, and I'm going to give this Justice number 8, again, this whole series, 4 out of 5 stars. So moving on.
4 out of 5 stars. That's pretty good. I read, I think when Justice first came out, I think I picked up the first 2 issues, but it was around the time of that whole identity crisis thing.
Yeah.
And I wasn't big on the whole DC universe then. Titans hasn't done anything to, you know, win me back. So I kind of stopped getting it, although I really do like Alex Ross's work. So I may have to.
Well, the thing that you, now that you mention it, the good thing about Justice is it takes place outside of the regular DC universe.
Has it always?
Yeah, it always. Okay. Because you know, like I said, Dick Grayson is Robin. They've got the old school Supergirl and Batgirl, and it's like classic Silver Age heroes. The original Aquaman, Barry Allen is the Flash. You know, kind of like classic iconic stuff, but you know, it's the cheesy dialogue is taken out. I mean, the villains, you know, the villains are sort of the old school Brainiac and Gorilla Grodd and all that, but they're not cheesy at all. I mean, they're really threatening. Bizarro.
Yeah.
Gorilla Grodd. Solomon Grundy. Just all of those guys. They've really done a good job at making them scary and showing. And Alex Ross, if you've ever read, you know, any interviews with him, he's a big time fan of the original at least the Silver Age heroes of that time period. And mm-hmm. to him, they are the heroes. You know, all this stuff that DC does now with the changing the heroes and giving them weird powers and power-ups to make them more interesting. Basically, I think, I'm not positive, but looking at this book, it's almost like they're making a commentary on the state of superheroes, because they're putting them in the same situation that they were in almost in Identity Crisis, where, you know, the villains have found out their secret identities, and Zatanna used her magic to wipe their memories right? I mean, that was the whole set off, and there was this big controversy, and she used her powers to wipe Batman's memory and all that. And it's going to be interesting to see what Ross and company do to get the heroes out of this situation. And this, you know, and this, are they going to do the same thing? Use Zatanna to wipe the memories and turn the villains into give them lobotomies basically with her magic, or is he going to do something else? You see what I'm saying? So he kind of makes commentary, in my opinion, on the current state of DC Comics.
Okay, I'll buy that. When the trade comes out.
In my opinion, it definitely is probably going to be better for trade because you won't have to wait quite so long. For the issue. But you want to hear what I've got next?
Yeah, what you got next?
JSA Classified number 18.
Okay.
Written by Tony Bedard, with pencils by Scott McDaniel and inks from Andy Owens. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about this one. There's not that much to really talk about. Basically, JSA Classified tends to focus, it's sort of out of continuity story. So what's going on in this issue of JSA Classified isn't happening right now in the regular JSA title, which hasn't even started yet. That's going to start in December, I think.
Yeah.
It's going to start over. But basically, it focuses on Our Man, right? It's got kind of a team up of Our Man and Bane.
Bane?
You remember Bane, right?
Yeah.
The guy who broke Batman's back in the 90s, he was addicted to a drug called Venom, which pumped him up and all that stuff. Well,
not to be confused with the Bane in Batman Forever. Was it Batman Forever that he was in with Poison Ivy?
It was
Jim Carrey.
It was Batman and Robin. It was the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Was it Batman and Robin?
Yes, it was.
Oh man.
Because he was just like a goon working for Poison Ivy.
Yeah, he wasn't like he was just a nobody, a thug. You know, my favorite part of Batman and Robin, if by favorite I mean the part that probably stands out as sucking the most, is that they're bat skates at the very beginning. they have ice skates in their boots. Do you remember that part?
Oh, yeah. I've always seen it once.
Everything
it
is frozen.
Long.
And so, we've been saving these for Batman's had these for 10 years, just in case. Been waiting to use them.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
But go ahead.
Well, anyway, let's see. But yeah, the thing that both Batman and, that both Our Man and Bane have in common is that their powers are closely tied to drugs. Our Man uses this drug, and his father, the original Our Man in the original JSA, used a drug called Miraclo. I think it's called Miraclo, that would boost his give him superhuman strength, speed, and all that for an hour. And at one point, Our Man was addicted to Miraclo. I mean, you can imagine it's a drug that gives you all these powers, but it was just as addictive as anything else, and so he had a lot of problems with that. Eventually, he's recovered. I guess he's using some kind of less addictive form of Miraclo. But anyway, Bane was also, addicted to Venom when he fought Batman, and after Batman eventually beat him, he found he broke his addiction to Venom, and now he's trying to hunt down this company that is making more Venom. He's trying to, destroy this company, take down the, the scientist who's making it and all that stuff. Well, he finds out that supposedly this company is also, whoever's making it is also tied in some way to the Miraclo drug. So he gets Our Man, and he basically uses him to track these guys down. And one of the things that he does is he kidnaps Our Man's father in a jail, the jail that Bane grew up in, because he grew up in jail. It was a Pena Duro prison in the Santa Prisca Island. So he takes him to this prison, and basically they fight and have this whole kind of conversation about, drug, powers and drugs and all that. And so, you know, they fight and they defeat Bane and escape before destroying the prison or something like that. Anyway, it's not the worst issue I've ever read, but it's pretty standard. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
it's you know, nothing really memorable about it. Tony, I'm not a big fan of McDaniel's art. I mean, again, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen, and there's definitely worse artists out there. But his art is like a combination of anime and Western style, and it's just, in my opinion, it just doesn't do it. It's just a little too, I don't know. I don't have the words. It's just not there for me anyway.
Okay.
So JSA Classified number 18, I'm going to give 2 out of 5 stars.
Wow, 2 out of 5. Okay.
Moving on.
I'll leave Bane and our man there since you broke out of jail or whatever. You know, some barely made a big impact on you.
it really didn't. I mean, that's all I got out of it. I mean, you know, it's just your average superhero story. I thought it would be kind of cool because I did enjoy Nightfall, and they don't really use Bane that much in DC. But anyway. Next up, I've got Superman Batman Annual Number 1. And this is the series where Superman and Batman team up and go on crazy adventures. And until recently, it was written by Jeff Loeb, which I think Mark Verheiden is writing that title now. But anyway, the writer of this annual is Joe Kelly, with artwork contributions by Ed McGuinness and many others, Ryan Ottley, Sean Murphy, and Carlo Barberi. So the gist of this annual is it shows the first time Batman and Superman found out each other's secret identities. And what happens is it takes place on board a cruise ship sailing through the Bermuda Triangle. And, of course, Bruce Wayne is there because there's some kind of gala going on. And Clark Kent and Lois are there because of the same thing. They're going to be reporting on it. And the really funny thing about this issue is, you know, just how – well, it doesn't take itself 100% seriously, mm-hmm. which is always fun. But it's so well written that, you know, I just had such a good time with it. I didn't think about, well, how does this fall into place with the continuity? How is, you know, is this a new change post Infinite Crisis sort of
right.
thing? I just enjoyed it because Bruce is in his full actor mode as Bruce Wayne, the playboy. He shows up there with, you know, these two women in bikinis, and he's just the ladies' man. He's hitting on Lois, and Clark, you know, he picks on Clark the whole time. You know, he calls him a hayseed, and he just completely acts like a dick. Well, the funny thing is the people that booked the rooms for this cruise ship actually, due to a mishap, Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne wind up in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to share a bedroom, and it's pretty funny. You know, Bruce Wayne tries to pay Clark to stay somewhere else or to get off the ship, and Clark's just like, you know what, screw you, I'm staying here. You know, I don't care what you say. And
yeah.
So they're at a dance party or whatever, and I forgot to mention this is very important. The supervillain Deathstroke the Terminator,
yeah.
you know who he is? Got
yeah.
the eye patch or yeah. Apparently real, you know, powerful. I mean, you know, in terms of like physical ability, he's right up there with Batman. But he's an assassin for hire, and somebody hires him to assassinate Bruce Wayne on this cruise ship. So he's there too, and he's you know kind of undercover, trying to get trying to kill Bruce Wayne. At one point, he tries to poison Bruce, and Bruce is sitting there dining with Lois, and he's about to take a drink out of this glass that Deathstroke, in disguise, has poisoned, or once, you know, has put poison into. And Clark overhears Bruce call him a hayseed, and he uses heat vision to destroy the glass without Bruce seeing it. So that sends Deathstroke back to his room to get on his costume and try another way. So let's see.
Hey, you know, I actually read this one.
You did it.
I did. This was in my box last week, and halfway through, I was kind of like, I guess you're going to get to most of this, but I was actually talking to Marty while I was reading it, and I was like, what the heck is going on? When all these other guys start showing up.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like I said, it doesn't take itself 100% seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So once I saw that with that in mind, I don't know, just the character moments with them both acting in character and Clark being
really
jealous
good.
because Bruce is putting the moves on Lois, and you know, she doesn't know he's Superman yet, and he's, you know, she kind of likes him, but she kind of likes Bruce. I mean, who doesn't, really? What woman doesn't like Bruce Wayne? You know, I like the moment where they're laying and they have to share a bed, Clark and Bruce, and they're just kind of looking at each other, and then Clark says, "Okay, this is just awkward."
Yeah.
So stuff happens, and you know, as you said, these people show up. Basically, these people from another, an alternate Earth, show up, and there's all this craziness, and Bruce is like, you know, they both want to leave to change into their superhero stuff, but they're like, well, I got it, you know, this other person is, you know, Bruce is here, I can't do this in front of him, Clark is here, I can't do this in front of him. So Bruce tries to knock Clark unconscious with a dart, and it just bounces off the Man of Steel. So they're like, what? Oh, so knowing this, they both spring into action, and what happens is there's like an evil Superman and an evil Batman who are
Ultraman,
like
Ultraman
and the Owl, who show up, and they have to fight each other, and that makes for some pretty hilarious scenes. But the funniest thing I thought was Deathstroke's alter ego.
Yeah, yeah,
who,
that's pretty funny.
Because all it is, if you look at it the whole time, it's basically pointing out how much of a copy Deadpool is for Deathstroke.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
And they keep killing him, and he keeps coming back. At one point, he rips his own arm off and starts hitting somebody with it.
Yeah, he has all, you know, knives, swords sticking out of his head.
He's got all the swords sticking out of his body, and the real Deathstroke is like, will you just die?
Yeah, that was actually, I mean, it was pretty funny. But, you know, when all that was going on, I was like, what is the D? Because, I mean, I've kept up with now, the one DC book I've always kept up with is Batman, Superman. And
when all that was going on, I was like, what the heck?
And then I don't know if I want to give away the ending, but I kind of figured out what had to be going on a little ways through.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'll let you, if you want to give away the ending, I don't know.
I think I've given away enough. I mean,
yeah.
It is, but in my opinion, it is worth the $3.99 just for laughs. And some
Did
really
I pay
great artwork.
$3.99 for that?
Well, I didn't, because I ordered it online.
Oh, yeah. I paid $3.99 plus tax.
But it's worth the $3.99 plus tax. I didn't pay for it. But no, it was good. I did enjoy it. I give it 4 out of 5 stars.
All right. So how is that online thing working out?
Well, I've only been receiving books for 2 months, you know, so I'm still going to wait on, you know, I've still got orders sort of waiting in the queue, because, you know, the books, they only release them at the end of the month after all of the books have been published.
Right.
You can, of course, if you want to pay more for shipping, you can do shipping twice a month.
Yeah.
You just have, you know, but you're, for your full savings, you do, you know, you might want to do shipping once a month, which is what I do.
Gotcha.
So far, it's working pretty good. I mean, I've gotten all the books that I've ordered, except for what hasn't been published. Because you know with the shipping schedules of comics, they don't always come out when the solicits say they're going to. So that's a problem. But what happened, you know, that I don't get my books when the solicits say. But DCBS, the company that I'm ordering from, they don't really have control over that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have control over whether Walking Dead comes out or Aquaman or whatever, which are, you know, the two books
right.
that for some reason are just and Wonder Woman as well, which are just delayed and canceled. So what happens if it's delayed, then they just ship it to you when it arrives. So if you're, you know, so maybe the books that didn't come in this past month will come in next month if they're just released late. If they're canceled, then what they do is they credit that amount to your next order.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's so far it's working out pretty well. The only problem is, you know, you have to pre-order the issue. So if there's something new you want to try, you can't flip through it and decide if you want to buy it right then and there.
Right.
You have to just kind of go on a limb and say, well, this looks kind of cool. I guess it's worth a shot. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Got anything else this week?
I do.
Okay.
I do. If you want me to keep rambling on a little bit.
Is it a newer book?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we do one more and then we'll move on to maybe talking about heroes or
Zendaya. That'd be great. That'd be great. Okay, gonna talk about the Detective Comics.
Okay.
You know, good old regular Batman title. Written by this is number 824. Written by Paul Dini of Batman the Animated Series fame.
And his chain of restaurants.
What?
You said Paul Dini. Yeah, Denny's restaurants. But...
Oh, sorry. Dude, that one went completely over my head.
Do you not eat at the Denny's?
Completely.
I don't. I haven't been to Denny's in like 10 years.
I haven't either. Trust me. Anyway, let's see. I've got Don Kramer on pencils and Wayne Falcher on inks. And with John Callis's colors. So Paul Dini has been doing a cool thing here. Each issue for Detective Comics so far has been pretty much done in one. You know, he's told the entire story from beginning to end in one issue, which, as you know, I'm a fan of that because I don't really always have the time to keep up with the big story arcs and, you know, especially like six-part stuff, if it's not all that great, you can easily get bored with it. You know, like you were talking about with Teen Titans and stuff. Just, you know, you get bored with it, but then you still have to wait for, you know, several more months before it's over and you can get a new story. Not so with Detective Comics. You know, it's so far it's been focusing, you know, one supervillain per issue. And this issue focuses on the Penguin, which the Penguin now... is a big time. Well, he's not. He used to be a big time gangster. Now he just owns a club. He just owns a nightclub called the Iceberg Lounge, which is like the big thing in Gotham City. You know, celebrities go there. Big time players go there because, you know, it's the end thing to do. So Bruce Wayne, he was invited. Bruce Wayne has been invited to a club by the Penguin or Mr. Cobblepot,
right.
The distinguished Mr. Cobblepot. And it's funny because Bruce Wayne, you know, keeping up with his public image, shows up to the party with with someone who's supposed to be like Paris Hilton.
Right.
And the Paris Hilton-ish chick basically disappears for the entire party talking on a cell phone and getting drunk. And Bruce sees Lois Lane there. And so Lois and him are talking, and, you know, I guess Lois knows who he really is because he's telling her, you know, look, I'm here just to check up on what the Penguin's got going on, blah, blah, blah. And the Riddler shows up too. Now, the Riddler is also, if anyone has read previous issues of Detective Comics with Paul Dini, Riddler is now gone straight. He used to be a criminal. Now he is a legit private investigator. So he shows up, and, you know, him and Penguin kind of go into a back room, and Bruce Wayne listens in on their conversation to see I'm sorry, Lois listens in on the conversation to see what's up. You know, these two supervillains ganging together to, you know, have some big criminal plot. And it turns out it's nothing like that at all. Penguin is just into legitimate ripoffs now, because he talks about selling T-shirts for, you know, $20 or something when they cost 25 cents to make. But he's into legitimate ripoffs and nothing illegal. He says that's where it's at now. Being legit and operating as a big time capitalist is where it's at for him. So the rest of the issue focuses on someone named Mr. Zzz. Mr. Zzz is a narcoleptic who is playing cards and winning every hand. In fact, he's winning so much he's running Penguin out of business. So Bruce suspects that someone else is operating Mr. Zzz. So he gets Zatanna to help him out with a little spell that helps him locate the person that's actually doing this. And it's pretty cool. I don't want to spoil the ending, but Batman locates the party behind it, and he finds out who it is. But in the end, everything works out okay. Penguin doesn't go out of business. But it's funny, in one panel towards the end of the book, Batman apparently has gotten so good at crime fighting now, he can virtually appear out of nowhere. Seriously, I mean, and I have to point this out. I wasn't the first one to notice this. Chris from Chris's Super Invincible blog,
right,
pointed this out in his blog, and when I saw it here, I was like, oh yeah. But he's following Mr. Zzz back to his hideout.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the person that he works for is kind of controlling him. And, you know, Mr. Zzz opens the door and they talk for a second. All of a sudden, there's a panel. You know, you don't see anything. And then there's this big panel with Batman giving him a kick to the head just out of nowhere.
Well, of course.
You have to see what I'm talking about. But it's just kind of funny if you pick up the issue. But all in all, this book is good. Definitely a good read without a lot of the drama and useless stuff that plagues comic books now. I give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Awesome. I may have to pick that one up.
It's good.
Cool.
The next one, I think the next one's actually going to have the Joker in it. And the covers are great, too. This artist, Simone Bianchi,
uh-huh,
who's doing the covers, I believe that's how you pronounce the name, is very, very unique. I mean, the covers are really spectacular, I think.
All right. Sweet.
So anyway, tell us about Heroes.
Well, Heroes comes on in 10 minutes. And it seems like the last 3 weeks, me and Marty have been cutting it really close, because it seems like every time we record now, it's Monday night, and it's like, hey, it's coming on in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But this is a week that all the different heroes... I think a lot of them meet, and their secret gets out.
Okay.
People know. So we've got, you know, you still haven't watched any of it, have you?
No, I haven't.
Well, there's a, you know, we've got the cheerleader, who apparently is the one everybody's got to save. You know, she's got the mutant healing factor going on, and you got the guy, the artist, who can paint the future, but only when he's high, and then you've got this... congressman, he's running for Congress or something, and he has flight, and so and you know, the Japanese guy that can control space and time, he's the only one who's really excited about the fact that he has powers. And cheerleader's really depressed, and yeah, last week I thought was pretty good. So I'm looking forward to you know, them, because so far every episode has been about all these people kind of moving towards getting together, and they're trying to save, you know, New York from a nuclear holocaust. You know, this week, yeah, hopefully we can kind of move a little further forward. I mean, the show does a really good job of, you know, kind of stringing you on and leading you on and making you come back. But I feel like it's time for a little push forward. Something to happen. So looking forward to that. I got my DVR set again, so it should be good. And yeah, I don't know if there's very much to say about it this week. I mean, I think we'll have more to talk about next week if we have this little segment again. But okay. So I will move on now to the Artist of the Week, Internet Artist of the Week section. And this is a blog called Drawings from a Mexican. At drawingsfromamexican.blogspot.com. And this guy's name is, I'm looking here, Dave Pimentel. Not sure how you pronounce that.
I think I recognize that, Dave Pimentel.
Yeah, you know, I was just reading it, and I've been going to this. I have his feed on my aggregator, so it just his postings just kind of pop up, and I really haven't paid attention to the name. But just now I was looking at it, and I was like, hey, that does sound familiar, doesn't it? But he's he posts and some of the artwork isn't his. I think it's I don't know if he teaches a class or if he's in a class, like a drawing class, and every once in a while he'll post some people's figure drawings and stuff. It looks pretty cool. So if you're into that kind of thing, and I would definitely recommend checking out this site. He's got a lot of stuff on here. This blog has been going on since March of 2006. So he's got some of the people's gesture drawings that he puts up there are really, really, really cool. So I would recommend going to drawingsfromamexican.blogspot.com to see Dave Pimentel's, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, his website, because that's a little charge at looking at that site. And so that would be our Artist of the Week there. So I was in went to Barnes and Noble the other night and was doing a little sketching, and noticed you know, my wife and I go and I just hang out with my sketchbook.
And you've been posting those on the website, by the way, if you want, you know, if y'all want to, anybody listening wants to check out some of the Barnes and Noble sketches, go to the go to www.gravyboy.com forums or Tales from the Drawing Board.
Yeah, so it's it'll be posted actually at gravyboy.com. It shows up on the front page.
Okay.
So but yeah, you know, and I had posted this, and Roger had mentioned something to me, I didn't post this, but when I was drawing them, I thought it that, you know, I think over half of these people I've drawn are overweight. must be an American thing, I guess.
We are fat.
I will vouch for that. I mean, that's the thing about sketching, you know, it kind of opens up your eyes to stuff. And I'm just sitting there doodling, and I'm like, you know, most of these people that I've drawn here are rather hefty.
We don't look like the superheroes, do we?
This is why it's important for comic artists to draw from life. Because, you know, nobody looks like that.
No.
But,
no, nobody does.
No, but, you know, I think we're a little heavier than we need to be. But
Sure.
But, yeah, it was just kind of interesting. You know, it's always a challenge, too. I think I got busted once looking at somebody trying to draw. That's always the challenge. To learn how to slyly look at someone long enough to the trick is to learn to draw quickly, like see quickly and remember it and then draw it instead of having to keep looking at someone. And plus people are moving pretty fast, so it's pretty just quick little gesture drawings that you don't give yourself a lot of time to make into some magnificent piece of art, because that's not the point. But yeah, I've been trying to, and I know I've talked to you about getting the little sketch jam going. We need to get.
Yeah, when are we
going to
do that?
I'd like to do it in the next week.
Soon.
I mean, soon.
if possible, yeah.
So we also got to have another B movie night. What's that movie? What's the movie you got? Not the one with Christopher Lee, but the other one.
Dude. Okay, it's Funland. Hang on one second.
Okay. Andy had picked up a couple movies from something at work.
Okay, sorry about that. I had to get the actual DVD.
Okay.
Funland.
Funland.
Here's the synopsis. Funland Amusement Park, a low-key family operation, is taken over by the DeMauro family, who forcibly buy the owner's shares after bumping him off. The DeMauros only care about the profit margin of the park and begin to cut costs and remodel rides to a less family-friendly oriented format. Neil Bruce Berger Stickney, the park's crack accountant who became a clown after a nervous breakdown, plots revenge when he is visited by the dead former owner of the park. Sorry. I'm cracking up because the guy who plays Bruce Berger is an actor named David Lander, who was, I believe, Squiggy in Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got exactly. It up here on the Internet Movie Database now. I'm checking it out here. Yeah, let's see.
Laverne and Shirley was a bit before my time, so I don't know. But this, it was Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley. But anyway, yeah, this is a perfect treat. It's actually supposedly a comedy, more so a comedy than a horror, but it's got every bad 80s cliche in it that you can possibly think of. It's got a guy doing the robot. It's got bad stereotypes. I'm not even going to mention it on here, but it's bad. And I mean, this seriously, you may get nauseous from watching this. It may cause physical nausea from just even having it on the screen with it on mute. But yeah, there's plenty of 80s rock. Even let's see, there's 80s rap in it from some guys that are working in a Funland cafeteria. So I definitely think it'll be a good B movie pick.
Yeah, we'll have to get that for our November get together.
But anyway,
right.
You want to wrap this up then?
Yeah, I think that's about all we got. We'll if you want to get in touch with us, you can stop by the Gravy Boy site at www.gravyboy.com, a book which will be out in full color in the spring for your reading pleasure. And you can send me an email at brian@gravyboy.com or to Andy at... Andy@gravyboy.com. So, stop by the forum, drop us a line, let us know what you think of the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Take it easy.